Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni. I'm joined by my wonderful trusty and buddy co-host, Cody Thompson. How was that, Cody?
Wonderful. I loved it. And you didn't even ask me how I am. I like this new vein. Now I don't have to come up with new words for that. So that works for me. Let's do that.
And we're joined by our regular and lovely co-host, Tracy Noble. Look at that. I didn't have to ask her either.
Hello.
We've got Matt on the keyboards. We've got Karen here helping us out, making sure we stay on track. And we're going to talk about something today that we are so sick of talking about, but we need to talk about it again. And hopefully it'll be the last time we talk about it for a long, long time. Cody, what is it?
We're titling this one, The Last Virtual Conversation.
That's right. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be the last time we have a conversation virtually. What it means is we don't want to talk about virtual work anymore. But we have to say, a lot of people out there, and we understand it, we totally do, are asking us, like, what's going to be the future of virtual work? And we can't believe that in 2022, you know, in July, the end of June, early July, we're still talking about virtual work. But what people are wondering about, and I get it, is like, so what's it going to be like going forward? What should the policy be? And companies are struggling with this. Some people think we need like national legislation about it. I think that's a terrible idea. But everybody's saying, what's going to happen with work going forward? Should we work from home? Should we work in the office? And we have a very definitive answer to that question. And that is, it depends. But that's a wimpy definitive answer. Let me be very definitive about that. It should not be decided at a corporate level. It should not be decided by somebody in a policy wonk think tank. It should be decided at the team level by the leader of a team with his or her team. And it should be decided based on what kind of work they're doing, where they are in the stage of work, and what is required to get it done successfully. And that's what we want to talk about today. Let's not talk about policies anymore. Let's talk about making good decisions at the local level. What we mean is closer to the work, closer to the customer, closer to the people doing the work, so that we can do the right thing rather than put a policy in place that's going to be generic.
I love it. And I love this idea that this is the last virtual conversation. One of the ways I was thinking about that is you ended your book, The Motive, with one of my favorite paragraphs in that book. It says, hey, let's stop talking about servant leadership, because that implies there's another kind. That's just what leadership is being a servant. So don't say servant leadership. And I think we're at this stage in work where it's like, well, let's stop talking about a binary, like work and then virtual work. This is work. Now it's infused into all of our business now. Like everybody, whether you work, you know, in any type of industry and organization, it used to be, oh, I work virtually. Now that's just what work is called. So I love the idea of sort of putting that to bed and just saying, this is the new normal. And I love the concept of, it actually depends on, now we can actually strip that out of the conversation and say, what are we trying to accomplish? And where should that happen for it to be the most effective?
Right. And we almost forget that long before COVID, people were doing customer service in a virtual way. I mean, long before that, people were like, yeah, I don't go into an office at all, because I have very clear ramifications and clear specifications of what I'm doing for for customers when they call. I know what they need. I can do this anywhere. It's one-on-one. I can help them. And we were all like, yeah, that just makes sense. That's a good way to do that kind of work. Then COVID comes and everything shuts down and everybody's suddenly like, well, should we be going back to work at all? And the answer is, well, yes, if you need to work with others to get things done. Maybe there's a few more jobs that we didn't realize could be done virtually, but most jobs we do together. And so we need to be guided more by what the work requires, not by some esoteric policy. And you know what's a good way to talk about this, you guys, is to talk about thinking about, like, I like to use analogies. I'm an analogy guy. But like in professional football, okay, you have 50 or 60 people on a team or college or whatever else. Well, the kicker's job is very different than the offensive lineman's job, right? So if a kicker said, hey, coach, can I go off by myself over there and practice my kicking? the coach is going to be, and I know because one of my friends was like a professional kicker. It's like, of course, you know, what you do, you march onto the field, you kick and you leave and all that. It's not all that integrated. So if you want to go work out with the punter on your own and do that, you can. If the offensive lineman said that, they'd be like, no, you guys have to be on the same page. You have to pull and stunt and move and do things for one another. If you guys worked on your own, you'd never be coordinated. So the nature of the work dictates the policy that a coach would have around how they go about practicing and playing. And that makes sense. So when a company of 100,000 employees says, we're not going to have anyone come back to work yet, and then suddenly they say, we're going to have everyone come back to work, that seems to be like a recipe for a decision that's going to displease just about everyone.
Mm-hmm. So, Pat, I love the sports example. Can we talk through some corporate examples of a team that, let's say, has to work in the office?
Yeah. Well, if you're doing innovation work, if you're trying to like collectively solve problems using innovation, that by definition requires a back and forth and like healthy conflict, debate. Mm-hmm. That does not happen very effectively in a virtual world. Mm-hmm. So that's the nature of the work. And even if you're doing innovative work in the for the Working Genius, Cody, you were talking about this before. Tell us about how Working Genius plays into this.
Well, this has been really helpful even as we've talked through our transition to having more virtual conversations and what do we do in person. But Working Genius gave a ton of language for us to say, when you talk about a team, Pat, and you say, decided at the team level, it's based on the what type of work they're doing. It's not like even at that team level, it's all virtual or all, you know, in person, co-located. It could be based on what you're trying to accomplish. So when we talk about Working Genius, when we talk about wonder as the first stage of work, and then invention and discernment, a lot of that happens. That invention discernment is where, in your book, The Five Dysfunctions, we think conflict should happen, where we're evaluating ideas and arguing with each other around strategy and what's the right solution. And that really, that wonder, invention, discernment stuff is much harder to do virtually. And we can speak from experience with that because we use this language all the time. We will often sometimes start a conversation where we're like playing in that space virtually. And then we'll say, you know what, when you're in the office next week, let's really fight that out when you're here, you know? So we actually try our best to put that into the co-located when we're in the same room. And then there's some other things when we get to like galvanizing. A lot of times galvanizing can actually, it's helpful to be in person as a galvanizer. I don't love doing it over Zoom that much. But once you've set the direction and you've already invented and discerned what the plan is, it's okay to do some galvanizing virtually, and then enablement and tenacity, depending on what it is, obviously, depending on what we're trying to accomplish, that tends to be a little easier to happen virtually because everyone has their marching orders.
Right. Mm-hmm. And like, I think about like, so you have somebody in your office, you have one person in your company that does accounts receivable. Okay. Their job is to call people that owe the company money and to pay their bills. Okay. It's quite possible that that person could do that work remotely with very little cost, maybe even a benefit, maybe they could be more focused. Mm-hmm. Now, you have a bunch of people in financial planning and analysis that have to figure out how to allocate budgets to different organizations. They might have to be in a room where they've got a big whiteboard up there and they're like, okay, how do we divide up the budget? And we're gonna have to call these people together and let's listen to their answer. That might be an activity. I mean, I wanted to get into something very nitty gritty, where they might have to be together in the same room.
Right. Well, I will tell you an example. Literally 5 minutes before we jumped on to record this podcast, I was in a book launch meeting about your new book, The Working Genius book. Here's why. I think a really practical reason is like when you are on a Zoom call or a, you know, virtual call, you typically got an invite with a calendar header that said like, we're going to talk about book launch. And just by way of that being the title of that, it pulls the elevation into the lower elevations of work. Like, so for this exact example happened 10 minutes ago, where we are going to send a advanced reader copy of your book to a bunch of people, right? Just to, a lot of authors do that. And the conversation was actually, hey, how do we get the emails and organize the who's the attention to thing? And what we should have, and while that's happening, I was like, that's all work you can do individually on your own. We don't need to talk about that one. What I think we need to talk about is actually the, what do we want them to do with this book? How do we get them to read it? How do we get them to open up that thing and not just put it on their desk? And we said, oh, we're going to be together on Monday. Let's have like a 30-minute invention, discernment, argue about what's the best way to do that. Now, once we do that, go get the emails and put them in the spreadsheet. You can do that virtually. You know, so just identifying what you're trying to accomplish can help you decide in a case-by-case basis, should we do this work virtually or in person?
Right. And to try to make one policy that fits an entire company, even a relatively small company, is silly. And to try to dictate that removed from the work is not a smart thing. You know, I'm going to go back to the sports thing because it's fun to talk about that. Like even on a baseball team, the relief pitcher sits out in the away from the regular dugout for the whole game, right? They probably pitch in every third game or so, maybe. And I've actually listened to a bunch of pitchers in the bullpen, they call it, the relief pitchers. They just sit out there and talk about all kinds of crap. You know, they're sitting out there, I went golfing yesterday, I did this. Because, you know, they're not really that involved. They could work out, pitch, and train separate from the rest of the team. But the shortstop, the second baseman, the third baseman, they have to turn double plays and they have to figure this out. So even the way they work is very different. And they play the same sport, but they do very different things. So ask yourself, what is this job? Are they an offensive lineman or an infielder? Or are they a kicker or a relief pitcher? And it doesn't mean they're not all important, but some lend themselves to interactivity and interdependence. And that's how we should be making our decisions. So policy schmolicy is what I say, you know. And now, here's the hard thing for a lot of companies, though. For a few years now, we've been in a very employee-driven marketplace. It's hard to find good people. And so employees are like, I don't want to go back to work. You know, Apple Computer, all their employees were like, we don't want to go back to work. You're not respecting us. I think, unfortunately, this is about to change. I think with inflation and with the economy being so shaky, I think I'm hearing already that's changing. And so I think that the employees are going to have a little bit less leverage of saying, hey, I don't want to come into the office. And instead of a company saying, well, you're going to come in no matter what, they should make the case for why their job requires it. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to do that kind of work, then maybe you need to make a career change to work in accounts receivable or something where you can stay home. But if you want to be in an innovative thing where you have to have conflict and you have to make difficult decisions and you have to be in a group, that's required. So maybe there's more offensive linemen that will become kickers. And, you know, a kicker would be a great offensive lineman. Just kidding. You're 5'8", 150 pounds. You're a great kicker. Well, why don't you become a guard and so you can come to practice in a different way?
Yeah.
Anyway, people are going to have to realize the work should determine how you work, not a policy.
And I think even a byproduct of having the conversation like, hey, what are we trying to accomplish? Even if teams did that together and said, hey, is that something we do better in person or virtually? Identifying the type of work and clarifying what we're trying to accomplish, all of that will actually be a benefit in and of itself to the team to sort of categorize where we're at and what we're trying to, would this be more helpful virtual or in person? And I like what you said, Pat. I think that in the past world, the attractiveness of virtual work for some people was, oh, I get some flexibility. It's a perk. Like there's some level of like perk to, oh, I could live wherever I wanted, or I don't have to go into the office or commute. And now that this is baked into and it used to actually be, we've heard this from a lot of people too, who are trying to hire developers or hire people. Everyone, that is no longer a perk. That used to be the way they go, hey, you can not move and you can work for us. Now it is a table stakes. Like all work is like that. At some point, you're going to have the option to do some virtual work. And so this is going to be a differentiator, like you said, to people are going to have to opt into. I love when you said the employer has to explain why it's important that some of this job happens in person and give the reason for it and say, really, at the end of the day, work is about us being as productive and effective as we can be. Right. And you can't be as productive and effective if you just choose one or the other.
Yes. And I think the lasting impact of these last few years will be there will be more people that have more flexibility. I'd rather talk about flexibility than virtual work. More people are going to be flexible because we know we can get things done when we're not in the office. But to think that that's going to swing, that the pendulum is not going to come back, it needs to come back, not as far as it was before. And we need to be thinking more about flexibility. Making a person come into the office when they don't need to is silly, but excusing them from having to come in when it the work suffers is something that a good company is not going to be able to afford to do. So what do we think? Do we think that's going to be the, Matt, do you think this will be the last one? What's your bet? What percentage level do you think? 100% this is our last virtual one? 2%?
20%.
You think we're going to talk about this again?
I'm with Matt.
Okay.
Well, maybe the number of questions we get alone, the number of questions we get about this alone, but
and we understand it. There's a lot of people trying to figure it out, but maybe we can reduce the angst around this and say, let's make that decision at a team level based on what needs to be done rather than a policy level.
Yeah. And I think you're totally right, Pat. The idea, I think that people say, oh, well, we don't want it to be messy. Well, it's going to be messy. We want a policy to try to make it clean. It's not ever going to be like that. So just accept that that's the case. And then that in that messiness, there's actually a lot of opportunity to get more done and have more flexibility.
Yeah. And when somebody says, that's not fair, say, oh, what's fair to the customer? What's fair to the work? What's fair to what we're trying to accomplish rather than a policy that seems kind of, you know, abstract. All right. I think we've talked about this enough.
Good riddance.
Join us next week when we talk about the new future of virtual work. Hopefully not. All right. Hey, thanks for joining us, everybody. We always tell you we appreciate it, but we never take it for granted. And we'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.